The signing of the Russo-Chinese Treaty of Alliance on August 14th raises the question as to whether the recently widely publicized crisis in Chongqing-Yan'an relations, that is, between the Kuomintang and the communists of northwest China, has passed. What do you think, Powell? Is the crisis still in being, or has the crisis actually passed over?
The crisis hasn't disappeared. But all indications point to the fact that it's on the way toward a solution.
Do you agree with that, Miss Smedley?
Yes, if I'm to believe the statement made by Dr. T.V. Soong yesterday in Canada, it seems that there will soon be a solution. Friendly, Dr. Soong says that we Chinese desire to be on friendly terms with our great neighbor, and I am convinced that Soviet Russia desires friendly relations with China.
Well, that leads then to a discussion for purposes of clarity as to the outstanding terms of this new Treaty of Alliance of 1945. As I understand it, there are about half a dozen outstanding points in this agreement. First of all, in significance perhaps, is China's recognition of a long accomplished fact, at least since 1924, namely that it has lost its sovereignty over Outer Mongolia, that Outer Mongolia is to be an independent sovereign state. Almost equal to that, and perhaps in long-term view of greater significance, is the fact that Russia returns to Manchuria. How do you understand the new Russian position in Manchuria, Powell?
Most of the explanations and editorial comment concerning this treaty contain somewhere a statement that it might have been worse.
Well, that isn't stated in the treaty itself, is it?
No, in the discussions concerning the treaty, that it might have been worse. You also have a universal agreement that Soviet Russia has returned to the position of Russia in Manchuria prior to the Russo-Japanese War in 1906. But we should remember that position that Russia occupied in China, in northeastern China at that time, was the high point of old Russian czarist aggression in Asia, and that precipitated the war with Japan, resulting in Russia being driven out of South Manchuria.
The Russo-Japanese War of 1904 and 5, yes. Do you agree that there is any basic significance between the secret Treaty of Alliance of 1896 and that of 1945, Miss Smedley?
I do not. I think the Russian Revolution of 1917 changed Russia's internal policy and its foreign policy. At that time, Russia recognized the independence, the right of colonial and semi-colonial peoples to independence and to equal status with every country in the world. I think they have tried to live up to this. I think there have been great conflicts due to intrigue of imperialist powers.
You wouldn't include Russia in your list of imperialist powers?
No, indeed I do not. And I trust this pact as a sincere and honest and very, very serious attempt of Russia, China, and of the American government to turn over a new leaf and to create conditions in China and between themselves that would lead to lasting peace and prevent a third world war.
Excuse me, Powell.
Don't you think that instead of saying that Russia has turned over a new leaf, I would say that Russia has changed her methods of aggression?
I didn't say Russia turned over a new leaf. I say all of us have tried. We have pledged ourselves to start anew, you might say, to turn over a new leaf in our dealings with each other, try to prevent a third world war.
I'd like to believe that, Miss Smedley, but as a student of history, I must say that I haven't forgotten the provisions, or certain of the provisions at least, of the secret treaty of alliance between Russia and China of 1896. And it seems to me that there are some rather amazing parallels between the two treaties. For example, as a result of the Treaty of 1896, Russia obtained the right to build a shortcut for the Trans-Siberian Railway across northern Manchuria, which railway came to be known as the Chinese Eastern Railway. Shortly after that railroad was built, Russia gained another right, namely to drop a straight line railroad from Harbin in northern Manchuria down to Port Arthur. Now, if you look at this new treaty of alliance of August 14, 1945, you find that Russia has come back into the control of this railway system, which is now to be known as the Chinese Jiangxun Railway, that Russia and China are conjointly to manage this railroad, but that again, Russia, as in 1896 and following, is to have the predominating position, that is, with respect to managing the railroad. We find also that just as in 1896 and the years following, Russia developed this special position in South Manchuria, specifically Port Arthur and Dairen. Again, in 1945, Russia is to have the predominant position for purposes of war in case Japan should again become aggressive with respect to China. Russia is again to have the predominant position in Vladivostok and at least a semi-predominant position in the neighboring free port to be of Dairen, known in the earlier days of Russian imperialism as Dalny. So I don't exactly see, Miss Smedley, how you can say that Russia has turned over a new leaf or changed basically in its relationship. I would be inclined to challenge you on that point.
I believe that the terms of this treaty are determined by the whole world situation and by the conclusion of the war with Japan, which has left a vacuum in Manchuria. Russia really didn't have to return Manchuria to China and recognize its sovereignty there, as it does by the alliance, unless it had wished to do so, because it is powerful enough not to do so if it were an imperialist power.
Could Russia have failed to do what it has done with respect to Manchuria and still consider itself one of the United Nations? In other words, if Russia, on the basis of an 11 days second war with Japan, had said to China and to the world, we hereby return to Manchuria and take up where we left off a few years ago, how could Russia conciliate world opinion? Powell, what do you think of that?
Well, I think that Russia has also been under pressure from the United States in connection with the negotiation of this treaty, and that they possibly have made concessions which they otherwise might not have made.
I noticed a moment ago you said that the treaty, many people say, is not as bad as they had feared. What did you mean by that?
Well, Russia might have taken Manchuria as she has done in Outer Mongolia.
Oh, insisted, for instance, that that the Japanese puppet state of Manchukuo should now become a Russian puppet state,
and
of whatever name.
In addition to that, the Russians have agreed to remove their troops from Manchuria, I think within 3 months.
Yes, I believe
of the signing of the treaty.
And this is a pure commercial undertaking.
With Japan.
How about Xinjiang? Weren't there some fears of Russia's position with respect to Xinjiang, Chinese Turkestan?
Yes, there has been a civil war in Xinjiang for many months, with the Russians supporting the Muslim crowd on the group on the principle that there should be created a Muslim nation in Central Asia under the protection of the of the Russian government.
Your source
now
of
Russia now Russia agrees not to interfere in Xinjiang province.
And Miss Medley, have you any observations on the subject of Chinese Turkestan?
No, I haven't. I don't know Mr. Powell's sources of information.
Well, I'll give you my sources. Wendell Willkie's book written after his trip around the world. Wendell Willkie spent considerable time in the capital of Xinjiang, and he had conferences with all officials up there.
Chinese officials.
He made the statement in his book after he had held these conferences. He said, "There is enough explosive powder stored here to blow the lid off of the world as soon as this war is over." He continued that statement by saying that the United States must assist China in settling these serious problems with Russia if we're to avoid another world war developing out of Asia.
Well, I don't know about this, because I have not studied Xinjiang. Anyway, that question is settled by this Treaty of Alliance. And I believe this Treaty of Alliance must have been, in part, originated at the San Francisco Security Council. You remember when the question of the independence of colonial peoples came up, that America sided with Britain and voted down the idea of independence for colonial peoples, and China and Russia stood together. That won for Russia the sympathy of peoples throughout Asia.
You think that the United States has, for practical politics, has in part reversed its position?
I think it is very unfortunate that we took such a stand and that we sacrificed the sympathy of people who believe that, as our soldiers have believed, that this war was a war of human liberation and of democracy and not a war of imperialism. And so I think that we have perhaps now partially turned around and are rectifying that mistake, at least in regard to China, which has not been entirely independent. And we have aided China and Russia in implementing this Treaty of Alliance.
The statement has recently been made by certain newspaper correspondents that the signing of this Treaty of Alliance between Russia and China constitutes a slip-up as far, or at least a loss of leadership on the part of the United States. In other words, that Russia and China have put over something on the Americans, that just as some people argue that the Americans have lost out in their moral and perhaps more than moral position with respect to Europe, so they have now lost out, passed over the leadership to Russia with respect to China.
I disagree.
You disagree with that?
Oh, completely.
I might tell you that there is a widespread impression out in the Middle West and over the country, down in the South, Texas and so on, where I traveled recently, that we have fought this war with Japan. We have defeated Japan. Russia comes in at the last week and grabs all the plums.
What plums have they grabbed? I do not see that at all. I think that is another manifestation of the of warmongering in this country leading to a third world war. And I believe that this treaty has taken cognizance of this and that it is a very serious attempt of our government, the Russian government, to prevent a third world war. Certainly, if in China America should back one faction and Russia another, the third world war would be just around the corner.
I think we would certainly be bound to agree that there could be nothing more unfortunate than for a situation to keep on simmering and finally develop into one in which the United States would be backing the Chungking Kuomintang nationalist government, while Russia would be backing the communist Yan'an government of northwest China. You would agree to that, would you, Powell?
Well, China, obviously in this treaty, has tried very desperately to get rid of this communist, what we might call a communist cancer, in the center of the country. And in order to do that, they have paid a very heavy price.
What is that price in your estimation?
They have given up their claim to a very large section of territory, Outer Mongolia, which with Inner Mongolia, in which the Russians also claim interest now.
I believe there's no mention of Inner Mongolia in the treaty.
No, but by definitely gaining control of Outer Mongolia, it puts Russia in at least a position to dominate economically a section of Chinese territory that I think I figured it out is something like seven times the size of the state of Texas.
Outer Mongolia is not a Russian colony. Outer Mongolia, from 1924 on to the present time, has been the Mongolian people's a republic. True, they have leaned on Russia heavily. If China had a democratic government, I believe their orientation might be toward China.
You mean the Mongols?
Out of Mongols, yes. And I do not think you can just think in old imperialist terms of the past. And I think the Outer Mongols have something to say about their destiny. And they have said it. We have had Americans, high American officials, who have gone there.
Can you mention any high American officials?
Henry Wallace was in Mongolia when he passed through. And he had conferences in the capital.
You mean he flew over Mongolia?
No, and he stopped there and had conferences with the Outer Mongolian...
Where?
In the capital.
At Ugo.
Has that been printed?
I do not know if it's been printed or not, but I know it to be a fact.
Did you talk to Mr. Wallace?
No, I haven't talked with Mr. Wallace, but I know that they stopped there. Anyway, I say this, that if, Mr. Powell, you speak of cancers, I would like to also reply that the demands of the Chinese Revolution, which is led today by the Chinese Communists and also by the Chinese Democratic League, is not a cancer. If there is a cancer, it is the reaction in China and throughout the world, a reaction of fascism. All you have to do is to look at the demands of the Chinese Democratic League and of the Chinese Communists on the central government to know what this thing is that you call a cancer. And don't forget, in connection with this, that many of the Kuomintang officials in China also believe that democracy is a cancer.
Oh, what do you mean by that statement?
I have heard Chinese officials in Chongqing say that democracy is nothing but the outer defense works of communism, that if you give one step in toward democracy, you then lower your defenses for communism.
You're arguing then that the Chongqing Kuomintang government is actually a fascist government.
I think there are very strong fascist elements in it. There are also liberals within the Kuomintang, but they have had no voice and no power at all.
For how long a time, would you say? Do you mean from, say, 1928? Or?
Yes, always, I think, since the founding of the Kuomintang, there have been these liberal elements within it. And it is this, but they have no power. Dr. Sun Fo is one, and a number of leading military men and political men.
You overlook the fact that China has been at war for 8 years. The most serious
war they've ever been involved in. I do not overlook
it. And in every nation in the world, there has been a general suppression of so-called democratic development.
Do you agree to the general suppression?
I believe that democracy releases
the energy and the enthusiasm of people. Democracy releases the energies of people. The communists carried out in the north, in the regions which they liberated from the Japanese, say what you will, I know you're opposed to it, they carried out the nearest approach to democracy that the Chinese people have ever known. And I want to read, if I may, with your permission, read the demands of the Chinese Communists and of the National Democratic League of China.
Please do. That's very pertinent.
All right. These have for years been made on the Chinese government and have been denied. Point one of the Chinese Communist demands. The government to call a conference of all parties, groups, and non-party representatives to discuss all vital questions for a democratic administrative program.
That has been done.
The establishment of a coalition government of all parties and groups that shall prepare for a national assembly through free and unrestricted universal suffrage.
That has not been done.
Three, the end of one-party Kuomintang dictatorship. Four, legal status of all parties and groups. Five, repeal of all arbitrary laws against the people's freedom of assembly, association, speech, and press. Six, liquidation of the secret political police. Seven, release of all patriotic political prisoners. Eight, recognition of the popularly elected governments in liberated areas in North and Central China. Nine, the severe punishment of all traitors and the disbandment of puppet troops. 10, relief of refugees. 11, the communists have announced also that when there is a democratic government in China, they will immediately, and a joint high command, they will immediately surrender their arms to it, without any hesitancy, but they will demand that the Kuomintang do the same. The Chinese Democratic League, which is an organization of minority parties, of individuals and groups, unaffiliated individuals, also has most of these demands in their latest manifesto, just cabled to the New York Times a couple of days ago. They also demanded, in addition to these demands, the release of all political prisoners except grafters and traitors.
What are they going to do to the grafters and traitors?
They want them tried, of course, as war criminals. And they also demand the meeting of representatives of all parties and non-party delegates They demand the extensive paring down of the Chinese army. They demand the abolition of Kuomintang branches in the army, thus taking the army out of politics. They demand the end of conscription and the participation of all parties in talks with reparations from the Japanese.
Most of those things, for instance, the removal of the Kuomintang branches in the army has already been carried out. The removal of the Kuomintang agencies in the schools has already been carried out.
That is not true. I do not know where you got your information.
It has been very definitely been printed in reports from Chungking. In addition to this, the national government has called a conference, a constitutional conference, to meet in November.
But that, I believe, that according to the latest report, has been agreed upon for postponement.
Yes,
just
it may be because of the change that's come about since the...
Now, it's the demands. It has agreed, according to the report in the Herald Tribune, it has been one of the points that had been admitted in the communist Kuomintang negotiations going on in Chungking. They have agreed to the demands of the National Democratic League and of the Chinese Communists to postpone this Congress, which means, of course, the... new elections on a democratic basis. I consider that a victory.
I'm not familiar with any thing that was in the paper this morning because I haven't read them. But all of the things which you mention have previously been agreed to be carried out as far as possible in view of the war situation. And at first it was decided and it was thought that they would not be able to hold a constitutional convention until after the war. However, they did agree to hold it next December.
I think, November. As time is passing in the way that it usually does pass on a University of Chicago roundtable, we had better pass on to one final consideration of interest to most Americans, namely with respect to American policy toward China at the present and in the immediate future, and with respect to the potentialities of American influence in that country. Do you see anything in respect to the past policy of the United States which is likely to be sacrificed as a result of this treaty between Russia and China, Powell?
Well, superficially, from the setup, at least the paper setup, of the treaty in Manchuria, I can't for the life of me see how that our traditional policy of the open door and equality of trade can be maintained under the situation which has been created by this treaty.
I'm trying to agree with you. The joint control of railroads and the joint control of ports.
It's not the joint control of ports. Dairen is a free port open to all the nations of the world.
There's been a great deal of talk in this country about the return of Hong Kong, British return of Hong Kong to China. How can you demand the return of Hong Kong to China when you turn around and make a treaty with Russia, giving Russia a naval port on the coast of China?
That is
Port
a joint
Arthur.
Naval port. It is definitely stated in the alliance to which the Chinese government...
Did you ever hear
agreed.
Of a naval port anywhere in the world that was managed jointly?
Well, this is one. and here it is. And it is definitely directed against the resurgence of Japanese imperialism. And can any of you say that there is not going to be a resurgence of Japanese imperialism, or that our warmongers in this country would not try to support Japanese imperialism? Let me finish. Japanese imperialism to use as a base against Soviet Union and China. I have heard recent debates in which people have said, we want the Pacific bases in all the Pacific islands for America to be annexed by America for a possible combination against Asiatic nations. And that our handling of the Japanese situation is so dangerous that I think our warmongers would even support a Japanese militarism in order to use it against Russia and China.
As I see it, the question has resolved into a recognition by the Washington government of what might be called the cold facts of the situation vis-a-vis Chungking and Moscow, namely that for the moment the United States is saying nothing with respect to the most favored nation treatment which it has demanded for American nationals from the beginning of its relations with China. But I do not think that this indicates any basic change on the part of the United States. Then we shall see that the United States will do its utmost to prevent any ultimate hold on the part of the Russians of Manchuria.
America has agreed to this treaty, I am certain. T.V. Soong never took a step in Moscow, but what he ran to our Ambassador Harriman, and he came back and forth from Moscow, Chungking to Washington time and again, and openly stated in the press that this dealt with this Moscow alliance.